Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. This is the PPSAI Working Group call on the 27th of January, 2015. On the call today, we have Graham Bunton, Justin Macy, Steve Metellus, Ollie Raich, Theo Geertz, Val Sherman, Chris Pelling, McKaylee Nyland, James Bledel, Frank Michalik, Don Blumenthal, Todd Williams, David Heasley, Griffin Barnett, Jim Bycroft, Paul McGrady, Kathy Kleiman, Darcy Southwell, and Osvaldo Nueva. We have apologies from Carlton Samuels, Christian Dawson, Sarah Wild, Alex Deacon, and Mary Wong. From staff, we have Marika Konings and Danielle Andella, and myself, Terry Agnew. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and back over to you, Don.
Mute button. Thanks, Terry. I think I'll actually last through this entire call, which would be a nice change. First, as usual, a reminder for people to update your SOIs online if you need to. We don't need to discuss them on the call itself, but it's important to keep them up to date for people who do check them, who do take a look at us and see what we're doing and see if there are any conflicts or whatever. I think we're going to do our best to get through the executive summary today. Category F is listed on the agenda. We're close to being able to discuss it, but not quite there. A group from the IPC and registrars that has been looking at some wording that would be agreeable to both has a working document, although I can't say agreeable to both is necessarily accurate, but at least something that's almost ready to put into the mix for discussion. And possibly inclusion in our draft report. I'm hoping we can focus on that, assuming we have a call, next Tuesday. I don't think that many of us will be traveling yet. I'm on the earliest from PIR, and I'm not leaving Wednesday. I would hope we have enough critical mass for attendance. Enough critical mass to go ahead with a call next week. It'll put us at a nice point of at least having gone through the report, or at least gone through the executive summary, and having a full draft document to be working with, not releasing, but at least working with us, working with going forward at Singapore and beyond. I'm going to reverse the order a little bit here. I think we need to do some planning for Singapore. So I want to do that just to make sure we can do it, and then reserve the rest of the time for continuing on from, I guess, 1.3.1 in the executive summary. I believe is where we left off last time, according to Mary. We've got the time slot, our usual time slot on Wednesday. A little bit more reasonable hour this time, unless it gets changed, which happened in Los Angeles. I don't know how much we'll be able to get accomplished in terms of a working meeting. There are a lot of conflicts across the board this year. Between sessions that are going to be of interest, between multiple sessions that'll be of interest to one group. There are two technical sessions running up against each other at some point. I'm not going to go through the whole list. But the fact is, this is going to be not a surprise. I think the focus here will be IANA. And we've got at least one session, IANA session up against us. We've got some others that I think are of likely interest to working group members. I'm not sure what our attendance will be. However, we should be looking at least to some substantive area we can discuss. And as usual, start with introductions of the members of the working group who are present, and leave time for questions from the audience. So let me open it up to see if there are any thoughts on how we should approach our open meeting, if there's anything different we might do. It's always boring to do the same thing over and over, but... oh, cool. Can I watch, McKaylee?
It's a closed meeting, sorry, but I would be more than happy to let you sit in the corner if you wanted, no problem.
Oh, appreciate it. Okay. Maybe I won't be on the call after all. Gotta stop reading the chat. Any rate, we do the same thing each time. It seems like a logical model to me. But I thought I'd toss it out to see if any thoughts on other ways we might approach things or specific topics to address. Kathy?
Hi, Don. Hi, all. Actually, I wanted to comment on something earlier that was said. Is that okay? I raised my hand a while ago.
I'm sorry. I did not see that. Yeah.
Okay, and it has to do with the draft that you were talking about that some members of the group might have been working on, I think, about reveal. And I'm just concerned that there's something floating around that may have a lot of text, a lot of procedures, and that a lot of people on the call haven't seen. So just raising the warning that this is, of concern about that, that one day may not be enough to discuss it. And there may be some serious work involved, but it sounds like only a small subset of people have seen it. So I just wanted to raise that concern. Thanks. And I'm thinking about what to do with the meeting in Singapore, so I will raise my hand later about that.
Okay. I know there is text floating around. It needs some work. I expect there will be some more work on it this week. We'll put it out there. We'll see how much is feasible to tackle next week and what isn't.
But, Don, only a few people are working on it, and everybody should be working
Kathy,
on it. We don't normally
that,
do things behind closed doors like that.
Kathy, we've done that all along in the working group, set aside certain topics for individuals to work on and then report to the group. That's what's happening here. It will be distributed to the entire group for comment when it's ready. We're not going to just put it in the report and move on from there. I'm hoping we'll have something to distribute at the end of this week. This was a topic that we agreed way back when this group would work on and then report something out for the working group to look at. Any other... concerns about how we're handling topic F, or thoughts about how we should work on Singapore? Okay, we'll work on topics as we go along. Excuse me. We'll work on topics as we go along. There's nothing we have to cast in stone until the last minute, I don't think, on that subject. If folks have different ideas for just how to conduct a meeting, that'd be great. Again, doing something different is always useful. when we go back to and just, I'm going to be going on mute very frequently for throat clearing. Just if I drop out for unexpectedly, that's why. Mary, if you could pick up, and this is just one of the downsides of not actually conducting the call last week, I think Mary or Steve went out exactly where we left off in the prelim conclusions. I'd appreciate it.
This is Marika. Mary's not
right.
On
Mary's
the call
not on the
today.
Call, I'm sorry.
And I wasn't on last week's meeting, but I think Mary's
right.
Note suggested that she made changes to, I think, 1.3.1, 1.3.2, and 1.3.3. So I'm assuming that's where you all left off, but I see that Steve has raised his hand, so I hope he's coming
yeah.
to the rescue.
This
yes,
is Steve.
Steve.
I think that the last section that we talked about was 17, was point 17 under 1.3.1.
That's right, I'm sorry.
I think is at around page 10 or something. I'm sure the pagination is the same on all these things, but...
Steve, it's really difficult to hear you. I'm sorry.
Okay, I think 17 was the last point we talked about under 1.3.1. It's at the bottom of page 10. But I think Holly had raised a question on the list about 15,
yeah.
We could turn to.
Yeah, I had noted that and figured we were past there, but didn't remember exactly where. Holly,
we
if you could just mention that for folks who have not kept up with the with email, I'd appreciate it.
That's fine. It's Holly Reich for the record. I noted in the language, and it's probably the language not just in 1.3.1, but in discussing the idea of publication, we use the term reveal. And we use the reveal and publication in the same breath. And that makes it very confusing because we've been really, really careful with using reveal to mean a particular thing. And by putting that into another sentence, we really confuse ourselves and certainly will confuse readers. So I was thinking about it, thinking what we possibly need is some kind of definition section that says reveal means this, publication means this, and then use the terms really carefully because, okay, I'm clear that this is a first draft, but when I started to read through, I wanted to make a lot of other comments, which I can we'll wait for, but the language itself needs cleaning up because it's not clear. Thank you.
Yeah, I definitely see the point. I think Kathy also posted in agreement posted that she agreed in the chat. Not in the chat, in email. And saying publication means the reveal and disclosure means the reveal kind of gets circular and confusing. You're absolutely right. The cleanest word that comes to me also gets circular because I would look at this and say publication means the disclosure, but then disclosure means the disclosure is kind of sloppy too. I'm willing to entertain thoughts for rewording now, or we can just address that in the review and drafting stage before we distribute. Anybody have any thoughts on how to clean this up?
Don, you've got a couple of hands in the queue there.
Yeah. Yeah, just I was in one of my throat clearing things. Steve?
Yeah, this is Steve Metalitz. I didn't think this was confusing, but obviously if others did, then we need to attend to it. I think we're using reveal as a generic term, and there are two species. One is publication, which is revealing in the who is system to the world, and the other is disclosure, which is revealing to the party that requests the contact details. That's what 15 says. I think we obviously need to be consistent throughout. Kathy has suggested to taking out revealing, using two other words, announcement and sharing. If people think that's clearer, I'm okay with that. But I think we have made an effort to be more precise in how we are handling this topic. And reveal covers both publishing to the world and disclosing to a single requester. That's what we're trying to get at in 15 here. But if people think we could improve that, I'm certainly open to it. Thanks.
Okay. I've got a thought on how to maybe work on that, but let's go down the list first. Holly, is that a...
Yeah, that's new hand.
Sure, okay.
Thank you, Steve. I didn't realize that we were using the word reveal in two ways, and it perhaps underlines my point. That's why we actually need some kind of glossary to say this is what we're doing. Now, in the EWG report, there was very careful use of language, and maybe we could go to that report and pick out some of the language so that there is consistency across reports. But we need to agree on the language, and clearly we haven't done so now. Thanks.
Okay, glossary is sort of in the way I was heading, so... Appreciate that.
Michele? Thanks, Michele, for the record. Fully supporting what Holly's been saying, the problem with any policy development work is those of us who are involved in it closely can have a very good understanding of exactly what we're talking about, but somebody else who picks up the report, unless you give them clear guidance as to what exactly we mean when we use a particular term, they're probably going to, let's just say there is a high risk that they will misunderstand or misinterpret the terminology within the context of that. And I think, providing a clear, simple glossary with this would make it easier for people to access the report and be able to comment on it with proper knowledge. Thank you.
Yeah. I see the point. I'm also wondering if maybe just putting a keeping reveal, the word reveal, in those two definitions works if we put a definition of reveal right before it, and that'll just link the. That'll link the concepts directly without people even having to check separately for a glossary while reading the executive report anyway. Glossary to me is more for the really serious folks who are actually going to read the entire document. Paul?
I was actually going to suggest that we do a definition section towards the front on these terms that we want to be precise about.
Okay. Let's work on the different options as we prepare the final draft version of the report. Anything else on 15 here? Okay. We've gotten up to... We've gotten up to accredited providers. I think, if I remember correctly, we stopped in the middle of that. Okay. All right. I can talk again. You know, we had focused just on the basic requirement there on publishing terms of service. Are there any specifics, specific provisions in here that we need to clarify or expand on? In terms of what should be in terms of service? Okay, yeah, Steve, I'll take that that we got through. I thought we had stopped, particularly, I thought we had stopped before the final provision. But okay, I don't see any hands, so we'll move on. Okay, number 18, about the accreditation program, will require providers to have a link of to a request form or specific criteria. Okay. I can read it out loud. That's right. There are people who might not be looking at the Adobe Connect or might not be able to look at the document that Mary sent out. I'm responding to Kathy's suggestion in chat. ICANN's accreditation program must include a requirement for all accredited providers to include on their websites and in all publications or disclosure-related policies and documents a link to a, this is in brackets, standardized request form. Question one, do we want to have a standardized one? Or an equivalent list of specific criteria that the provider requires in order to comply with such requests. Kathy's really looking to make me test how well I can talk today. I appreciate it. Obviously, first question there is whether we do want to suggest that there be a standardized request form. Michele?
Thanks, Don. Michele for the record. I can see that it's causing problems, to be honest, Don. I think standardizing elements that might be one thing. But I mean, I look at the number of different ways that different registrars, different companies handle things. Trying to force a standardized form down people's throats would probably have more of a negative impact than a positive one. That would actually get in the way of people being able to respond. You know, I mean, we use Zendesk. I know other people use Kayako. Other people use proprietary solutions. And how you integrate that into forms on your websites and things like that can vary quite a bit. So I'd err on the side of caution with that one. Thanks.
Okay. Any other, Kathy?
Yep, coming off mute. I think also we might want to delete the word standardized. There may be some standardized aspects of the request, but country to country, proxy privacy provider to proxy privacy provider, over the course of our discussions, we've already heard about differences for reveal under national law, under other types of requirements. Different proxy privacy providers will have different standards, so they may want to reflect that. Proxy privacy providers may want to reflect that in the form. And then the presentation will be different, whether it's an email or a web. So, the standardized word may not fit here. Thanks, Don.
Okay. I appreciate that. Bouncing from raised hands in the chat. And remembering that anything we need in the executive summary will probably have to be reflected in the full text. But let me just suggest deleting standardized A request form, and then going on to say with a list of, you know, minimum list of criteria, and then we could add those here. I don't know if we have to fill it all out here, but I'm just raising that as a possibility. Just a request form and then list a minimum set of bits of information that have to be included. McKaylee?
Yeah, I think speaking about elements makes more sense to me. I mean, also as well, you know, Kathy's looking at it from a legalistic perspective that, you know, under various national laws, you may be required to do certain things in a particular way. I mean, the thing, if you look at ICANN policy and ICANN contract, where ICANN has been mandating specific templates to be used, you know, it ends up causing issues. I mean, you end up in a scenario where the way it's worded, if, for example, 90% of my customer base speaks Italian, I still have to send them a load of notices in English because the stupid contract is so inflexible that it mandates it. I can send a translation as well, but, you know, why on earth would my Italian-speaking clients care about for stuff being sent to them in a language they don't speak? So I think the element aspect makes more sense to me. And we've also seen issues in other aspects of the contract where, you know, mandating the order of elements, things that has led to unexpected consequences. So, for example, I can see, you know, there's been issues with the positioning of certain email addresses leading to a massive increase in abuse reports that were completely frivolous in nature. So just, you know, be careful. You have to be careful how you do these things.
I understand that completely from experience. Okay, well, I guess we can edit this language. And then, again, this is an executive summary, so perhaps as we look at the full draft, we can add specific items in the body. You'll feel free to send recommendations, put recommendations in the chat or through email, though. Let's move on to 19. On accreditation. Item 1, and I may short circuit. No, I won't. Item 1, privacy proxy customers should be notified prior to deaccreditation of a provider to enable them to make alternate arrangements. One possible time in which to do so might be when compliance sends breach notices to the provider, as customers then would then be put on notice, as is done for registrar deaccreditation. Point 2, other privacy proxy providers should also be notified to enable interested providers to indicate if they wish to become the gaining provider, again, as is done for registrars. Point 3, all notifications are to be published on the ICANN website. It's just a wording thing. I don't know if we need the parenthetical with each item. Item 4, a deaccredited provider should have the opportunity to find a gaining provider to work with. Item 5, a graduated response approach to deaccreditation should be explored. In parens, a set series of breach notices up to 3 with escalating sanctions, with the final recourse being deaccreditation. Item 6, and this is in brackets, a customer should be able to choose its new proxy privacy provider. And last item, the next review of the IRTP should include an analysis of the impact on privacy proxy customers to ensure that adequate safeguards are in place as regards P2P proxy privacy protections when domain names are transferred pursuant to an IRTP process. There's a lot there. Hoping everybody followed at least what I read or through the document. I made a minor editorial comment, but are there any other thoughts on what we should on what there is to address there? I guess one item in particular is an entire point is bracketed. We probably discuss a little bit as, about whether customers should be able to choose their own providers.
Hi, Don, it's Kathy.
Oh, sorry. Don't see a hand there. Okay, go ahead.
The bracketed one. I think maybe we can take it out of brackets and perhaps just qualify it where timing allows proxy privacy. You know, customers should be able to change their proxy privacy provider.
You'd be able to change or choose?
Choose.
Okay.
But in this case, it's change, right? Because there's a problem. So that ability to change in light of the problem with the proxy privacy provider.
Okay, well, let me just follow up briefly on it. Is there a general, do we generally have any issues with ability to change, or is this way more in the context of being able to opt out of any reassignment and say, no, I want my own provider, my own new provider?
I think it's both. So you have a deaccreditation process, and in some cases it may be there's an escalation process, but how much the customer knows is maybe something we should talk about a little bit. But the customer, if there may be situations where it escalates quickly, in which case the transfer of the customers may be, I think we've talked about this before, and that the transfer of the customers, there wouldn't be time for people to opt out and to go through that whole process because that could take, what, several weeks. And in that case, we want to protect the privacy of the customer in the emergency situation. But if time allows, if the deaccreditation is a slow one and the escalation is a gradual one, then it seems like we should be trying to preserve that principle that we've agreed on, that a customer should be able to choose its proxy privacy provider. But I understand in the particular context of this point that that may be difficult. Maybe one of the providers can provide some more detail. But here, I'd take it out of brackets because, you know, if it's possible, we'd like to preserve this principle, I think. Thank you.
Okay. That helps. Steve?
Steve Metalitz. I generally agree with Kathy. I think it's in brackets because we weren't sure there would always be feasible. And if we have something like where feasible or similar language at the beginning of this, I don't have a problem with taking it out of brackets. This is in the context of deaccreditation, so it is choosing a new provider, not the general changing provider in normal times. And the point about what the customer knows, that's dealt with in the first bullet. So I think we've covered that. But I don't have a problem if we have something like where feasible and customers should be able to choose a new provider to replace the deaccredited one.
Okay, great. Thanks, Graham.
Thanks, Don. Just to agree, I think, with what Steve was just saying is that probably some language in there about where feasible. Frequently, deaccreditations are messy and quick, and the amount of work it would take for, you know, to assign new custom options for people could be extremely prohibitive. And also for a de-accrediting service, they would have to do similar work on their end, I think, and that may not be possible. So I'm happy to explore it, and I think it's a good principle. I suspect it's not going to be feasible in most cases. But again, I like the principle. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. I'm reminded of somebody else posting, "Oh, ye of little faith," in the chat earlier today. Let's hope it's feasible in a lot of cases. And while I think of it, well, no, I'll make a note to think of it later. Any other thoughts on 1.3.1, item 19, whether that item or any others? Yes. Don't read the chat. Bad idea sometimes. Steve.
This is Steve Metallis. I don't have anything else on 131. I just wanted to note that Mary Wong's suggestion that it might make be most efficient for us to turn next to 1.3.3, which is the place where we're saying we have split views and we're asking for input from the public. And make sure that we've got all that phrased correctly. So that was her suggestion, which I think makes sense. That would be 1.3.3, which is page 14.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with Mary's point. And I guess that whatever comes in on F will add to the summary of topics on which there is both a majority and minority view. Not a judgment on the document itself, but anything that takes this long probably will wind up with at least some level of disagreement. Let me just briefly mention... For people who don't have the document in front of them in one way or another, 1.3.2 discusses topics where we haven't finalized preliminary conclusions. And obviously we will have to return to those, but I agree with Mary's initial suggestion and you know, Steve's endorsement of it, that we really have more to talk about now that we can draw some conclusions on or definitions on. Yeah. Well, we can identify the issues better. Preferable way to put it. Than working on 1.3.2. But real quickly, a summary of topics where we haven't finalized conclusions. Contactability and responsiveness of accredited providers. Escalations of relay requests. You know, I think topics rather than the full text is sufficient. This is just for information. The next item is disclosure and publication related to requests by law enforcement or other third parties. And we also have a number of items concerning requests by intellectual property rights owners or their representatives. And we've also got to do some work on the consequences of termination of a customer's service. Oh, I'm sorry. I was on mute there. I was on mute because I'm losing my ability to speak properly. Graham, could you... it wasn't my house, Luke. It was the guy across the street. Thanks for the reminder. I'm losing the ability to speak clearly. Graham, could you pick this up?
I'm going to actually pass to Don, if that's okay. My office is exceedingly noisy at the moment.
I'm going to assume you meant Steve.
Yes, sorry, Steve. Thanks.
Steve, could you pick it up, please?
This is Steve.
Okay.
Okay, so we're on. I think we're on to 1.3.3, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
So this is basically the one topic that we've identified where we want to get. We're specifically asking for the public's views about whether there should be a bar on use of privacy and proxy services for online financial transactions for commercial purposes. And then we have a little background paragraph on this. Then we pose that question. Then we ask for input on three specific questions. One is, should the majority or minority view of the working group be adopted? Those are set out in the earlier paragraph. I think the majority did not think that prohibition was necessary or practical. A minority believed that registrants of such domain names should not be able to use or continue using proxy or privacy services. So the first question that we have is, which view do you agree with? The second, would it be useful to adopt a definition of commercial or transactional? And if so, should this be that suggested in the text or some other? And I read the definition in the text, which is domains used for online financial transactions for commercial purposes. And then the third question is, will it be necessary to make a distinction in the WHOIS data fields to be displayed as a result? So what's before us today, not rather than the different sides restating their positions on this, because we know we have a split here, have we asked the right questions here? Is the I think the thrust of this, or do we want to amend these questions or expand on them at all, or are we comfortable with how they're phrased here? So I will open the floor to any comments, pro or con, on that. These questions appear, I guess, at the top of page 15 of the text. If you're in Adobe, the text that's there. And I see Justin has his hand up, so Justin, go ahead.
Okay, can you hear me?
Dan?
Hello? Oh, great, thanks. This is Justin. The one thing that I took issue with was phrasing it in the majority and minority view. It's the only place that we do it in the document, and I don't think it was clear how we figured out if it was majority or minority, and at some point in time we even discussed that quantifying it in that way isn't necessarily helpful, and how would we calculate votes and that kind of stuff. So in general, I think that we should get rid of the majority and minority viewpoints and just say there are two viewpoints.
Okay. Other comments on that? I'm not hearing any objections to Justin's suggestion that we avoid the term majority and minority, and James has suggested in the chat another way to phrase it. I'm sure the staff can revise this to avoid the terms majority and minority if that's what we want to do here. So let me just ask if there's objection to doing that. James has his hand up. James, go ahead. James, are you on?
Sorry, hi, James speaking, and I'm going to say that hand was an error, that I was able to type it into the chat, and you relayed that already into the record. So I'm going to go ahead and lower my hand. Thanks.
Okay. Great. Anybody else? Any other comments on this point regarding majority and minority? Right. Then we will ask the staff to make those changes in 1.3.3. Okay, I think that brings us back to 1.3.2, where we do have some issues on which we hadn't reached agreement. And I guess the job here is to make sure that, in fact, we still don't have agreement on these, or if so, have we phrased it correctly? And obviously, these would be areas where we would specifically invite community input. So this goes back to the preceding page, 1.3.2. So this is page 12, excuse me, not the immediately preceding page. Page 12 of the document. And the first set of 3 points that we've listed here is on contactability and responsiveness of accredited privacy proxy providers. The first point is, what should be the standard for maintaining a designated point of contact? Should it be reasonable and prompt per the TIAC? Someone, I'm sure, will remind me what the TIAC is, or other formulation. Second point is, what should be required of privacy proxy providers in terms of level of responsiveness? Levels of responsiveness, reasonable and prompt per the 2013 RAA or another standard. And the third is, should the standard for provider contactability be the same as that under Section 2.3 of the 2013 RAA? So I guess I'll open the floor on any of those points if people have any comments. Comments on those. Do we ask the right questions? Do we have the right Michele, go ahead.
Thanks, Steve. Michele for the record. No, I just think this is an initial report, and it's the first time we're going out to get feedback from people, I think, we should probably just go with what we have, and then if people come back with kind of queries on the actual questions themselves, then obviously we screwed it up. But I don't think we're going to be able to improve on the questions much at this juncture. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. James, go ahead.
I see. James speaking for the transcript. So generally, I think these questions are fine. I guess my only, I think it's more of a stylistic edit. It could be material on the last bullet point where we say, should standard for provider contactability be the same as that under Section 2.3 of the 2013 RAA. I think that generally I would prefer we say something like, be modeled after Section 2.3. I don't know that when we say the same, I don't know that these agreements, the future PAA and the RAA will be a copy and paste between each other, but I think that they could be structured similarly and borrow from each other heavily, but not necessarily be the same. So just a minor point. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Michele, that's a new hand. Go ahead.
Yeah, again, going back to my point around making this document as accessible as possible, if we're going to refer to other policies or contracts, please include the relevant text. I mean, if I was coming to this cold, I was expected to go off and read like 5 other documents for every paragraph that I'm reading in our report, I'd lose my mind. So, it should be relatively easy to either include the text in the body here or in a footnote or something like that. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. I think there would be general agreement with that. I just would say, putting myself in the queue, and this is Steve, that I think there's a typo here, because Section 2.3 of the 2013 RAA is not about provider about registrar contactability. It's about general obligations of ICANN. So I'm not I'm not sure what was meant there, but and maybe the other thing to remember too is that there is some more detailed discussion of these issues in the body of the report, so possibly something there could be brought forward as in the footnote or whatever, as McKaylee suggests. But we should also, the staff should also check that site, because I don't think that was.
No, that kind of, and I was just going to say that kind of reinforces my point. You know, if you're relying on section numbers, then you know if you make the smallest typo, you confuse the living hell out of somebody. Whereas, if you got the number off by one digit, but had included the text, the person reading it would still understand what we were talking about.
Okay, good point. Any other comments on this paragraph here? If not, I think we've given some good guidance to the staff on this. The next topic in this 1.3.2 section is on escalation of relay requests. And you recall we have discussed this quite a bit. The working group reached preliminary agreement on a provider's obligation to act in the event it becomes aware of a persistent delivery failure of a relay request. The working group has yet to agree on obligatory next steps for a provider regarding escalation by a requester. The following is the current language under consideration by the working group, with the options included in square brackets. And then it gives that text, which basically is the same as what we have in the preliminary conclusion section, and then asks the question, what should be the minimum mandatory requirements for escalation of relay requests in the event of a persistent delivery failure of an electronic communication. And so the items in brackets that really have to do with whether this would be a mandatory standard, a should or must, that's one. The second would be whether the provider should be able to charge a fee for using this alternative form of relay. And the third is any such, and I'm quoting within the brackets, any such reasonable fee is to be borne by the customer and not the requester. So, again, I think our goal here is not to re-argue these issues, but to make sure that this accurately captures our areas of disagreement and the points on which we are particularly asking for input from the public. So I will open up to the queue to anybody that wants to comment on that. I'm not hearing, I'm not seeing any hands, so I assume that people are comfortable with how that's presented there. Now, the next topic, which we will be able to introduce here but not really delve into because it's 2 minutes before the hour, is on disclosure and publication in relation to requests by law enforcement authorities and other third parties. So there are three points here. One is, should there be uniform minimum standards for accredited privacy proxy providers to apply in determining when to disclose or publish or in verifying a requester's identity? The second question, should it be mandatory for accredited privacy proxy providers to comply with express law enforcement agency requests not to notify a customer? There's actually several questions in here in this point,
yep.
But I will say I don't think we're going to get any farther than we have on this question of law enforcement requests. I don't think what's going to be presented to this group will really address that. So I don't know if we have law enforcement folks on the call today or people who want to comment on this, but again, the question is this asking the right question? So since we are almost at the top of the hour, if there are any last comments that people wish to make here, we can do that. Otherwise, I think we'll have to wrap up and pick up again here next week, presuming that we have the call next week. Kathy, I think you're going to get the last word here.
I love that. Thanks, Steve. I think in this case we might want to add another question, which has to do with something we've discussed a lot, which is, does the country of the LEA matter? So if are we, you know, or if we want to use more detail, is there a difference if the proxy privacy provider is responding to the LEA from his or her national or local jurisdiction versus LEA from a completely different country?
Yeah, this is Steve. I think we actually addressed that in our preliminary conclusions by stating what our understanding of the definition was, and that it applied to the country of the provider. But you know, we can ask the public for input on that too, certainly.
Or I might, but if that's the case, then let's clarify here that the LEA is that national one. Thank you.
Okay, well, we're going to have to leave it there. We will return to all these questions next week. I'm assuming that we will have a call next week. I understand that since it's just before the ICANN meeting, we may have some attendance issues, but we'll do our best. And I want to thank everybody for their participation today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Thank you very much for joining. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a great rest of your day.